right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right, we're going to go on to regulated activities. Sorry to Jane and Michael have been waiting, but these guys just talk too much. So we had an hour scheduled for lunch. We will make that 45 minutes, if that's okay. And Jane and Michael have spent a bit of time on this. We discussed this at the Advisory Council yesterday. Got some advice from them, and we're looking to do the same with you today. But Mike, are you going to explain what the issue is?
Yes, okay. We're looking at rate-regulated activities, and Jane has prepared a paper which will sort of go through and included some specific questions in here for you. Essentially, we're looking for your views on users' information needs and how those are being met at present. And your views on what changes you think are needed. That's what the focus of the paper is. Now, Stephen had mentioned discussions that we had earlier this week at the Advisory Council, and the question to them was a bit different. It was a strategy question, which, to the extent that, or depending on how the discussion here goes, and if we've got time, we'd like to just test your thinking and your views on that strategy question. But the main questions for you today are about information needs. So, Jane, would you like to take us through?
Thank you, Michael. The paper is intentionally very short, as we're starting from the point we assume that you're familiar with the rate-regulated industry. There is a tiny little bit of background, so if anybody does want any additional information at this stage, then please do shout up. But as I think you will be aware, rate regulation does affect a great number of different industries. We tend to think very much of utilities, but it can include transport, to some extent some banking elements and lots of different types of things. But the focus on the projects the project that has been run in the past at the ISB has focused primarily on utilities, as was mentioned this morning, but it could have a much wider scope. But the common thread to all of them is that there is some regulatory body which is putting some limit on the price that can be charged by the supplier to the customer base. And there are different types of regulatory regimes. Some of them, the traditional cost-based regimes, where the regulator will identify certain allowable costs and then allow the supplier to charge a price to customers that will allow a reasonable rate of return on those allowable costs. It may be a fixed return or within a range of returns. Increasingly, though, we're aware that regulation is changing generally to a more incentive-based type of regime, where, again, the regulator will look at reasonable allowable costs. What is a reasonable rate of return on those costs? But clearly, for the customers, the regulator would like to bring down the price charged to those customers. So can we build in some sort of incentive element to say to the supplier, this is the price you can charge. If you manage to reduce your costs, you will get a higher rate of return. But at the end of the day, that normally is shared. The additional return is shared with the customer, and in the future, prices will reduce to reflect the greater efficiencies. And in practice, what we tend to see is a hybrid in some regimes, a combination of the two extremes of those types of regulation. Also, what we see in practice is differences in the accounting for rate-regulated entities. The information that we've had from a previous project and more recently the agenda consultation is that in IFRS financial reporting, regulatory assets, regulatory liabilities tend not to be recognised in financial statements. But in other jurisdictions, a couple were mentioned this morning, in America, Canada, India, more recently Brazil until they transitioned into IFRS, these regulatory assets and liabilities are recognised by the different companies. The purpose of the debate this morning, as Michael has said, is not to get into the technical aspects of the debate. That's something to look at in the discussion paper that was mentioned in the work plan session. what we're really looking to you for is information as to what you are experiencing in practice, what information do you get, what additional information would you like, where do you get your information from, would you like some of the additional information that you're looking for to come through financial statements, or are there better alternative routes for that information? We do have three specific questions in the paper for you. We don't necessarily need to stick strictly to these three questions, and we can take them in whichever order you like. But basically the first one is testing the evidence that we've got so far, which is in IFRS jurisdictions, people tend not to recognise regulatory assets and liabilities. So we'd like to find out from you, does that correspond with your experience? If not, what is it that you are seeing? The second question is, how do you compare then companies that do recognise regulatory assets and liabilities with those that don't? And the third question is looking at what information do you get relating to the different types of regimes, and do you get enough information to distinguish, for example, between the cost-based, cost-of-service regimes, or the more incentive-based, or the one somewhere in between. So that's all I'd like to say at this stage, and just open up the floor for questions or comments.
Would this also apply to indirect effects? I'm thinking of in Switzerland, there is currently an activity going on where the power grid is being transferred into Swissgrid, which is a grid operating entity. And there has been agreement on the valuation of that grid, but that agreement has come under scrutiny from the regulators now. And obviously, the value of that grid has a huge impact, or is going to have a huge impact, on the charges that are going to be put forward to the clients or the users of the grid as well. So that would be what I understand by that indirect impact.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the technical aspects that we will be looking at, it'll be what are the different regulatory regimes and what sort of costs would the regulator build in to the price that a supplier can charge to the end users, to the customer. So obviously something like that, there would be an expectation of recovery of the cost of that transfer of the grid. It's likely, I suspect, that it may take several years to recover that cost because of the size of the cost. And of course, that does have not so much an indirect of the price, but it will certainly have an impact on the price that can be charged and how many years that price can be charged over to recover the cost.
Awesome.
Yeah. I have personally little experience with analyzing rate regulated companies, but I see parallels between a rate regulation and a master contract between a supplier and a buyer. And if I just take an industrial company, if there's a master contract, multiple years that fixes supply, that doesn't result in a regulatory asset. And I think creating regulatory asset liabilities on the balance sheet actually reduces the amount of analysts that are capable of truly interpreting what is going on. And maybe a happy few that really are very on top of the industry and the sector, they can make chocolate out of it. But I worry about the wider group of analysts that would be able to analyze the such companies. And I think probably proper disclosure of how what next year's expected margin will be is far more insightful than a number on the balance sheet. And especially because even, it's my assessment that regulatory frameworks tend to change more often than not. So my preference would be to make no distinction between an industrial company that has long-term contracts and needs to disclose, and a regulatory regime, which is, in the end, simple.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. I think I don't have a great deal of experience of sort of analysing businesses which are disclosing regulatory assets, but it does seem to me that it is conceptually an intangible asset, or a rather sort of uncertain liability if you were looking at the other side, and that you're taking a whole bunch of assumptions about the future and putting them on a present value and then putting them on the balance sheet. And at a spot in time, that might be right. The next day, it'll be wrong. And from an analysis perspective, what you really want to understand is the regulatory framework, the margin for maneuver within that, and then you have to take a view as an analyst on, as you say, Martin, the uncertainties surrounding that framework and the circumstances under which it might change. So, you know, UK utility market, for example, we get a regular sort of Ofwat review when the regulator will reset the real cost of capital that is assumed that the business is allowed to earn from its regulatory assets. What would be useful, I think, is within the accounting framework to then have a clear sort of disclosure that says, you know, yes, we've got all this plant and machinery, we've got all these land and buildings, we've got all these assets from an accounting perspective. This block sits within the purview of the regulator, and the regulator thinks this block is worth X. From an accounting perspective, we show it as Y. And that would be very helpful, because then you're getting a set of accounts, but also that conveys information about how the regulator looks at those assets, and also particularly what the regulator can control and interfere with, and what bits and pieces are sort of either outside all regulatory control, or perhaps are controlled by a different regulator. So that sort of disclosure, I think, is helpful. But I wouldn't want to see new assets and liabilities coming into the accounts as such.
So would you see that as being part of the operating segments type of disclosure area?
Yes, I think that could be a very useful place to have it, yeah.
Can I just make a general observation, going back to the conceptual framework? I think there's an issue here of contingent assets. And at what point a contingent asset becomes an asset, even in the insurance? And Peter will tell you there's an ability to readjust rates on insurance contracts depending on your claim experience and some other things. And at what point, under the conceptual framework, something that may be a software asset becomes an asset, at what point you put in the balance sheet, is not unusual for a rate regulated versus other enterprises. Think about it more broadly. Once you answer that, you can determine whether it's a solid receivable or not so solid receivable. You can determine whether it's an obligation or not an obligation based on a conceptual framework. If it is, regardless if it happened to be an insurer or rate receivable or anyone else that can adjust rates, then you put in the balance sheet or take it off the balance sheet. It has nothing to do with rate regulated utilities. Then the other issue, you want to provide users with additional information on what the contingent receivables that an enterprise can get, which is intangible in value. Absolutely. Provide some disclosure about what those contingent receivables are, what are those contingent obligations are. Provide them in disclosure in the same manner that you would do in other areas of accounting, and you just caption it in the context of rate regulated. I just don't see a necessity to do something so unique, because then you go into industry type accounting, you're going to create something that's going to be incongruent with otherwise conceptual framework, and you're going to have to justify it somehow. So I would just go back and put it, bolt it to the mothership.
Well, I, first of all, it's very important. I share your concerns about the estimation of regulatory assets. I'm fascinated by, typically the Europeans say there's no such thing. I'm actually convinced that at least in the one context I can talk to, I'm convinced in the Canadian context there are regulatory assets. And when I use the term asset, I'm using the term, you know, as what we would call assets within the conceptual framework, a current, a good thing. I also share with you two other sort of issues. Mixed in with those assets, I think, at least in the Canadian context, there are what I would call contingent assets, or, you know, the idea of an asset is it has to be also a current good thing and not just a maybe we'll get, you know, maybe the weather will be good and there's something happening in the future. So I think mixed within what people are sometimes calling regulatory assets from a conceptual, we're in very much in a conceptual framework conversation. I think there's some things we might want to call contingent assets. The big challenge here is that, and several people said, you know, should we put what the regulator thinks. But the problem is you have no idea what the regulator thinks. In fact, this is I spent some time working at a company that when I started there was actually regulated and got to see some of the what we'd say in French, the cuisine, the kitchen behind it. And it's extremely complex and nobody, I think, they had at one time a whole department that did nothing but regulatory issues and I don't think they had any real idea of what the regulator thought the assets were. It was a war. We think it's this, you think it's that. But the key piece is, and I think it may be the deal with between the government and the company. There was, you know, they weren't changing the rules every. In fact, that's the one thing that the rules were consistent. So there was an asset there. So it may be geographic. They may not exist in Europe. They may exist in North America.
Jane.
I'm mostly with Martin and Peter. My only question is that can these assets sometimes look like, or the contracts sometimes look like a lease? You know, you lease the West Coast Main Line for 10 years, that's the arrangement, and you get the economic benefits out of it. It's a right of use asset. So you know, it is an intangible asset, but we've got a way now to measure that and put that on the balance sheet. So sometimes it's look, we're always saying that regulators stroke governments are so liable to change that you just don't have the same degree of control. You would never have the same degree of control that you would have with a lease. So I'm just interested in that distinction.
And Jane, you raise an interesting point because we also have IFRIC 12 already on service concession arrangements, and that's a situation where there is price regulation. The government tells you what price to charge, and there are infrastructure assets involved. So, in fact, you know, potentially, depending on the circumstances, maybe railways could fall within service concession arrangements. And, in fact, in that circumstance, the operator wouldn't recognise tangible assets on their balance sheet. They would recognise either a right to use the underlying infrastructure, or they would record a financial asset representing their right to bill the government in return for operating the infrastructure. But it's somewhere in the family there. It is related to the issues that we're looking at. Yes, we've got some specific guidance on that, but this is maybe taking a broader look at the notion of price regulation.
I should say that I think we may have been a bit spoiled in the UK in that you get so much information from the regulatory reviews from the regulator that, you know, you aren't relying on the companies reporting for the information.
Okay,
yes, thank you. In Japan, we don't have any explicit accounting standards for regulated industries to recognize assets and liabilities. However, there are exceptional isolated examples which de facto use this. One example I found was that a railway company was planning to make the major improvements to make the road railways to the elevated railways. So they were allowed to charge higher fees for these improvements, and they didn't recognize the profit from this higher fees. And later they abandoned the idea because of the higher cost and the lower demand, and they liquidated this. And another example is that some electricity generating companies using the construction in progress account rather leniently, preparing the higher, you know, electricity fee will be allowed once these are completed. There are these exceptions. However, in general, I talked with some analysts. By and large, they don't like the idea of permitting the use of construction regulatory assets and liabilities because that smells the smoothing out of the profit. And they say they can understand the what they are doing if the node will destroy it. At this point, we start using the company.
Well, I want to just go on my experience here, going back to the question to be very specific, because I think you're asking if where I see the trend. Do you know the Spanish companies that, the utility sector is pretty heavy in the stock market, actually the third largest in terms of market cap, is highly regulated. I don't see the companies really any separation there on the assets that they are, that generate income that are regulated. I think there's no really separation there. So I think I haven't seen any trend on that sense. No, I haven't seen any trend. I think this continues to be what used to be in the past, even if, I used to work much more on those companies. So I haven't seen any change. And actually, it's a big thing, big debate right now, these days going on about the rate-regulated companies in those. So I think definitely affects the market. And then if we compare that to, or we actually relate that to the question number two here, yeah, definitely on terms of valuation, we look differently. I mean, at least the analysts in Spain, we look very differently when the companies, they have assets that they generate income or that they are coming from assets and they are regulated and when they are not. Obviously, valuations, they are quite different because the fact that they don't have any liberty to set the price, and obviously, it's going to leave us a gap most of the time how far we can go. So, that would be my comment. I mean, I think most of those companies are very, most of the assets they are focused on those, on generating that kind of income. So I don't think I can, in this particular case, I can say that it's a big difference if there are other assets which they are used for a different purpose. So just to make a point on, there are certain sectors in Spain, definitely they are very, very affected by this regulation, by the rate-regulated approach. And there's no different accounting, that's the point really. The point is they are not a different kind of accounting.
So can I ask, do you get the information that you need to distinguish these different types of entities from financial statements? Are you relying totally on other information about the regulatory regime that they're operating
in? Well, most of the times in the comments and the annual report, they comment about the rate regulated and the effects that they have. Obviously, you have to do your analysis because many times the comments might be very, say, biased. That's the truth. But you get some information. But you're an electrical utility analyst. You really know what is going on. I mean, because in the particular case of Spain, the sector, they said, is very key in the market. So really, the market can, the companies, the three largest companies, they definitely have an impact in the market. So usually, you know what is going on.
And so the split of information between financial statements and other market disclosures through the regulator or other means, is that providing the information needed for following these companies? And are you comfortable with that split of where those different sources of information are?
Wouldn't feel qualified to comment. I don't know whether anybody else would comment. I just don't have enough information to know. I'd need to go back and do a lot more.
You can't rely on the regulator to provide the disclosure you want. So the question is you can take that one off. Do not, if somebody's suggesting it's coming from the regulator, that's not.
No, I agree. I mean, the regulator in this particular case is not the main source of information. Either the company or, information is mandatory that they publish, but the regulator is going to be very, very quiet in general about those kind of things. Actually, because they do that because they may change again in the short term. I mean, that's part of the problem.
It's funny. So in some cases they may change. In environments where they're actually fairly consistent, what they will tell the public is we're 100% behind you, the consumer.
All right.
But the reality is they're also got good finance people there who say that if we don't give these industries a reasonable rate of return, profit, that nasty word, they're not going to invest and we need them to invest. Right. And in regions. So
blackmailing.
Pardon? So the reality is.